It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I talk over.
Limited. Colbert, everybody know Colbert.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at...
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The fan of Aries Spears over there. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
I'm Big Brother. Your little brother. Even the show. I'm going to host it. I talk to Kobe. I talk to Jared.
Wow.
Jared knows how I host. Kobe knows how I host. And stunned that he's back in studio with me. It's... Jarrett Moore, Manager of Community Ambassador Program here at WFYI.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Probably right after the show, I'm going to make it official since we're online, but you will see a picture of us with the president, because we're going to talk, actually I want to ask president, what's his favorite Clint Eastwood movie now? I think it was Dirty Harry, and now he's made it The Bridges of Madison County.
Look, all I know is now when I rewatch Gran Torino, I'm going to think, wow, this isn't even acting. They caught Clint Eastwood at lunch and just started rolling film, and they cobbled that together, and that's the actual film.
And let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, his new film opens next week.
Yeah.
So
it's either like it's probably the greatest PR move for film ever, because there'll be people who had no intention of going to go see it.
Now wanting to see it.
Yeah.
And as I found out, I think we all found out, I mean, he's had the, if you've seen Million Dollar Baby and Gran Torino, and I think in this one, he's got the gruff Clint Eastwood voice.
Yeah.
I think he does that so he doesn't sound like he did last night.
You know, last night would have really made that whole appearance for me if he did, it just at some point, you know, got in, get off of my lawn.
He was already getting requests from the audience.
Yeah, I mean, so get off my, they'd had another five minutes for him and maybe one less chair.
Me personally, of course.
Get off of my lawn was going to make it into that speech.
I think me personally, I'd have been a little more hipster and asked him to do the stop laughing, apologize to my mule monologue from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm sorry, Fistful of Dollars. Or, of course, the 44 Magnum speech from Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
Everybody asked for...
clean off.
Everybody asked about Sudden Impact. So, or, you know, man's got to know his limitations.
And
do Magnum Force.
And I don't think there are any quotables out of Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
It's like Gone with the Wind on meth. But he didn't say that. That was John Cusack.
Yeah.
He directed that but didn't star in it.
That's just one of those movies where I'm like, even when it was out, I was like, really?
Yeah. I think he wanted to... I will say, as a director, the fact that he was able to do non-action stuff and non-Westerns and make... And, you know, something to be said about that. He had that much creative control over at Warner Brothers. Now, they didn't always make money, and they weren't always the best. But, I guess he even said he didn't want to be making Dirty Harry when he was 80, although Gran Torino came darn close.
I don't know. That's Dirty Harry, you know,
retirement
home.
But, I mean, films like Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, Bridges of Madison County, Invictus, Hereafter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, kudos to him for branching out.
Yeah, I mean, for whatever you thought about last night, I mean, he has a wide range of films. And you know what? Like I said, it was a good PR move, because here it is. You know, we're not even talking about that particular movie that comes out next week, but we're talking about Clint Eastwood and his films.
Although I'm curious to see what and of course, in the film, he's a widow. He has must have been married to one of the most beautiful women on earth because his daughter's Amy Adams.
Oh,
I got to see
right,
how that gene pool turns out.
Hey, man.
And if he can backhand Matthew Lillard, that thing might make more money than Battleship. I'm just saying. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. So Jared's hanging out with us, and Kobe's over there, and we will have a picture of the three of us and the president. I think saying his favorite movie is The Rookie, the one he did with Charlie Sheen, or maybe Bloodwork, the weird one with Angelica Houston and Jeff Daniels.
Oh gosh, I don't even remember that.
See, this is just an excuse to bring up the bottom of the tier Clint Eastwood movies. All right, so opening in theaters today, Cosmopolis. Which was the teaming of director David Cronenberg and Robert Pattinson. Let's move on. We have Killer Joe, a film with an NC-17 rating, going bold.
Yeah.
I know. It's a...
I don't even know why. It just that is the 13-year-old me that's just like, all right, NC-17, let's go.
Kobe, that's ours. Thanks, Jarrett. You've now made the sound clip page. But this is the black comedy directed by William Friedkin and starring Emile Hirsch and Matthew McConaughey. Then we have The Oogie Lovers and the Big Balloon Adventure, an animated movie. The Possession, not screened for press.
Telling.
Yeah, and I got to bring this up for Kobe. The film Celeste and Jesse Forever. This is the one with Adam Sandberg and Rashida Jones where they get divorced.
Oh, yeah.
Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you're divorcing Rashida Jones, you're an idiot.
Yep.
Big idiot.
So with that list of movies, it can easily be said the summer movie season is officially over.
Oh, we're almost out of August, but August is usually just a dumping ground, and, let's move on.
Okay.
Opening today, I did see, and it opened Wednesday, apparently. They're just trying to get that... Labor Day money in early, but it's the action drama Lawless, which features Shia LaBeouf, Tim Hardy, which you can sort of understand slightly more than you did in his last film.
Okay,
Jessica Chastain, Guy Pearce, if you blink, Gary Oldman, Jason Clarke, Dane DeHaan. Oh man, I'm going to butcher this. Mia Wasikowska. Alice from Alice in Wonderland.
Okay, there you go.
That's what you should start with.
Yeah, that lady. That's what you should start with.
That kid looked like Martha Plimpton Jr. And Noah Taylor's in this one as well. And it's directed by the gentleman who gave us The Road and The Proposition, and it's written by Nick Cave, the musician who also wrote the screenplay for The Proposition. Here's some audio.
Would you like to come for rob me sometime?
I know who you are.
Oh, yeah, who's that?
One of them Bond Grant boys. My daddy says you boys are the worst thing ever to hit Franklin.
You tell your daddy I said hi.
We got a chance to make a good stack of money here.
Pure corn whiskey.
It's a white lightning.
Come on, Forrest, see you dance.
I ain't dancing for you, too.
Come on.
It's impressive.
I respect you, Bond Grants.
You want any more of this stuff?
As much as you can bring me.
It's $2,000, minus my commission.
Look at you, swanning around like you're Al Capone.
They say in town you're looking for someone to help out around the place. Well, Mr. Bondrin, do I get the job?
Seems you've been involved in certain illegal activities.
There's a new special deputy. You've been brought in from the city. Want to work it out so everybody can do some business.
That's all.
I'm the one who's going to make your life real difficult from now on if you don't toe the line, country boy.
I'm a Bondurant. We don't lay down for nobody.
Those men that attacked you, they work for dangerous people.
There's a feeling around these parts that these Bondurants is indestructible.
Do you mean immortal?
Any idea what a Thompson submachine gun does to a mortal?
We are survivors. We control the fear. But without the fear, we are all as good as dead.
This is a war they're waging. You ain't gonna survive.
Not the violence that sets men apart. It is the
distance that he is prepared to go.
You know, this film got an R rating because of all the smoking scars.
Right, right. That'll get you an R rating every time.
Real quick. I think it's in the and smoking when they show the trailer.
Really? Yeah, oh, that's right. The they do have to mention and, smoking, yeah, and smoking, drinking, and
hooch. Yeah, drinking and selling of hooch is in this film as well. Turner's not around. Yeah, I said that. We're last week we were bringing up 80s movies that nobody's thought of in 30 years, so that's what we do here. There's a John Hillcoat, who directed The Road, one of the most depressing and excellent end-of-the-world films. That was the one with Viggo Mortensen. And The Proposition, a wonderfully gritty, dirty, violent Australian Western. He's involved with this one. And I give this film credit, as I do sometimes, for what it is not. Believe it or not, the film is not the pace of the trailer. I was going in kind of dreading, if you remember Mobsters, remember Christian Slater and Patrick Dempsey?
And Costas Mandalore.
Yeah.
I just remember because I thought that was the coolest name when that movie came out.
He also roomed with Ogletree Deacons. Wow. Sounds like that. But they, you know, it looked like, and Young Guns, where it looked like kids dressing up playing cowboys. And I was worried because, especially with the presence of Mr. LaBeouf when he's not flipping out in Chicago.
I
thought it was going to be kids dressing up like moonshiners and playing moonshine. Right. So, fortunately, that's not the case in this one. Kobe, you asked off air if it was like Public Enemies, and I don't think it's as stylized as Michael Mann's film. It's shorter, for one thing. That helps. But, no, this is a kind of a straight ahead, and it's not Country versus City. I was worried it was going to be the Book Learners versus the Hill Jacks or something. And there's a little bit of that with the Guy Pearce character, who's wonderfully odd in this. This film's also a showcase for odd accents when you have all those non-Americans like Guy Pearce and Gary Oldman and
trying
Tom,
to do
Tom
rural,
Hardy
mixing a little bit of
doing
rural and
Virginia
South
and Chicago. So yeah, Guy Pearce has a weird Chicago accent, and as my friend Jeff Marker brought up, he's like, why are the gangsters from Chicago going the way to Bumblebee, Virginia, to go directly to the source? Apparently,
right, right.
I said it's a good business move. So this is a film. Speaking of 30 years ago, I think if it were made 30 years ago, it'd have been directed by Walter Hill and had a really cool soundtrack by Ry Cooder. You know, this is the man who gave us Southern Comfort, The Warriors, 48 Hours, Last Man Standing, those films. Shia LaBeouf is all right in this. Tom Hardy, like I said before the trailer, you can understand him a little bit more in this than you did in Dark Knight Rises. Although he sounds like Ted Levine in this. He sounds like Ted Levine, and he looks like a roided up Tim Blake Nelson for you fans of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And Jason Clarke is the middle kid. The women have very little to do in this film, although there's one scene with Jessica Chastain, to which I will say, thank you.
Does she get naked?
Anyway, moving on. but it's a violent romp of a film. It's not nearly as good as The Road or The Proposition, but for an August movie, and it's not overly flashy. It's pretty. It's a straight ahead action film set in the hills of Virginia, and I think, you know what, you don't even have to see it at a matinee, Kobe. You could take Fair Sweet Bianca at night. If she
full
has
price movie?
This is a full price movie.
Oh, now,
that was a good movie.
See, it was
a full price movie.
I'd say that. It's not great, but I mean, for
you
this
wouldn't
time,
be like, wow, I wasted 2 hours and you know, some car wash money.
I'm sure somebody's gonna feel like car wash money.
I'm just saying, it's gonna rain.
If you take
car
out
wash money,
Kobe, if you can take out my vocals at the end of that, I think we can keep that as well. So, all right, let's take a short break because I have short time with the next film that's out on DVD and Blu-ray. And I should also mention, also opening today is Robot and Frank with his Frank Langella, Liv Tyler, James Marsden, Susan Sarandon, and 2 Days in New York, a film where Julie Delpy is married to Chris Rock. And we're all grateful for that. There's hope.
All right.
At least it's not Ethan Hawke. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Thank you.
any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
That's the best part of the video store this week, Wesley Willis.
This week, you might be right.
And you know what's really weird is like there's still a Blockbuster by my house.
Really? I thought you all went.
Me too. And the thing is, like, everything else around my house is closed.
I'm trying to think. I think there's one
but Blockbuster is somehow still open.
I think there's one on Keystone still.
No, like the one off of 56 and Georgetown still open.
Wow. So there you go. You might see Mr. Moore there.
No, not really. I just passed by and I'm like, how much longer, how does this place stay open?
Because some people need $2 DVDs to buy eventually.
And
$8 Blu-rays. You know that's coming.
Yeah.
And we'll be on it like rats on Kenny. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, why would you? Go to msociatewfyi.org.
We're very clear. There should be no questions.
And certainly no comments.
Next question.
We don't care what you think.
That's not true. At Matthew Soci on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook, whatever.
Yeah, social networking.
We're on the interweb. So before I begin with the big film that came out, there is a film that came out on DVD and Blu-ray this week that Jarrett, you got to see. We'd like to hear. There's now a series of ensemble films based on self-help books that, well, Woody Allen already did this almost 40 years ago with Everything You Want to Know About Sex, mm-hmm. but Were Afraid to Ask. And since then we've had, He's Just Not That Into You.
Into You, the one with,
What to Expect When Expecting.
Yeah.
And now we have Think Like a Man, which written and apparently a two-hour infomercial for Steve Harvey.
Well, you know what? The thing is, I know people who said, I'm not going to go see it just because of Steve Harvey's involvement. Like, Steve Harvey either rubs just people the wrong way or they're indifferent to him.
Unfortunately, when you top with his thing on Ray Ray and the original Kings of Comedy, that's your high point.
But, you know, I will let anyone who hasn't seen the movie and might be staying away for that reason he's in it like for maybe a minute and a half.
Is there a drinking game with how many times the book is mentioned?
Don't do that, because the book is kind of the centerpiece of the story, but not in a like they work
so
it in.
Is the book gonna star in a movie with Clint Eastwood?
You know,
or with the president? I should
most
say.
Certainly not.
No,
but actually, because I did see the other one, what was it? He's Just Not That Into You.
Yeah,
and there's a reason why people just weren't into that movie. Is
thank
because...
you, Gene Shalit.
And you know, this one I had basically low expectation of this movie going in. But the thing is, I can think movies, things are funny and not laugh out loud. Like, something has to be really funny for me to laugh out loud.
Okay.
And this was genuinely a funny movie. Like, there were times, and it wasn't as corny as I thought it was going to be. It was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be. And honestly, now that it is out on, you know, I just got around to getting myself a Blu-ray player, I'll probably check it out again. Because I enjoyed it that much when I saw it in the movie theater.
All right. Do we have a response, Cope? Do you got one over there?
Now that was a good
That's fine.
Movie.
There's nothing wrong with that.
See, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, I'd check it out. I mean, the thing is, if there's Kevin Hart, who he's basically playing himself in this film.
We got a good one here.
Y'all love it, so.
Y'all.
Yeah, so yeah, he's basically playing himself in this movie, but at the same time, that works because, you know, he's a funny, but he's just like in a lot of Eddie Murphy's earlier work, he played himself up until
that helps.
Maybe, you know.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, it's an ensemble piece. None of the people in the movie are huge, huge stars. You've seen them before. You know, I think the biggest star, I mean, to some people would be Turtle from Entourage. He's in the movie. He's Gabrielle Union's love interest.
Okay, that's not fair.
His agent is the man. So yeah, no I'll kid. Just say that.
Yeah, I think he said yes before the offer.
But
had
as
a period
far as
on it.
And you know, and the thing is, like, kind of being around the age of some of the characters in the movie and being unmarried, and you know, it's one of those things. It actually is relatable. It's a good film. I'm not going to say that it's anything earth-shattering, but it's something that you'll sit down, you'll laugh, you'll relate to the people you see in the movie, and you know what? You'll really enjoy it. I mean, it was actually just a good piece of entertainment. I didn't feel my time nor my money was wasted. Very surprised, though, because like I said, I made the girl I went with actually pay for the ticket because I'm classy like that.
That's another one we keep. Because really, the show is about collecting sound bites. All right, speaking of classy, big title out this week. Yeah, I saw it. I see film, so you don't have to, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. As a part of my love for my listeners, yeah, I'm reviewing Battleship. In fact, helping me out as we play the trailer, you're going to get a little taste of what we do usually when we play the trailers for certain films. Mr. Slagle is going to break down the trailer for us while we play. All
right,
it.
I'm gonna keep everybody up here.
Okay. Classic rock sound.
That lets you know that it's already gonna be manly.
Yeah. You ready for this?
I'm going to Babe. Walk up to him, look him right in the eyes.
What are you gonna say?
Your daughter is the best thing that has happened to me in my entire life.
He's a rebel.
An honor to have your permission to marry her.
Dad says no.
But he's into commitment.
What is wrong with you?
You went from enlisted to an officer faster than anyone in the history of the United States Navy. But I have never.
See, he has a lot of potential, but he's a, you know.
Screw up.
Yeah.
What my daughter sees in you is a great mystery to me.
Leah Cash,
enjoy
check.
These naval exercises, Hopper. They're likely to be your last.
Threat.
Uh-huh. Kind of like Maverick at Top Gun.
Computer sounds.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Things
the
are getting
heck
tricky out
there.
Got an unknown surface contact.
Bridge, TO, I've got nothing on the scope.
Aliens.
Get a team and a group to investigate this thing.
Hopper!
Not aboard.
You're on it.
Copy, sir.
Things are getting urgent.
Things are urgent now. Oh. Oh. Intense rock music.
Not on Zimmer.
Crash down.
Metal on metal.
Get out of the water and return to your ship.
Collateral damage.
Sir, my radar's totally down.
Silence. Stuff.
Our electronics are primitive for them because they're aliens.
Not Transformers. They're made by Hasbro.
Yeah.
Sounds of a Hasbro movie.
They're in trouble now.
Prepare to fire.
Sir, which weapons?
Where's Rihanna?
Gunfire.
Our bullets are do nothing against their. Strong armor.
Is that it?
That's it.
Hi, welcome to the Mystery.
What do you mean,
Science
is that it? That was enough.
All right.
My favorite part about that, it wasn't in there. I was waiting for the part where Rihanna launches the missile and she goes, boom.
Oh. And she wasn't convincing at that either.
No. Her film debut. Yeah. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, where do we begin? It's directed by Peter Berg, who gave us Friday Night Lights many years ago.
It's dumb.
They'll keep it coming.
How did the guy go from starring in the Great White Hype to like directing these huge movies? Who does he know?
I don't know, but he also wound up doing Hancock. So,
yeah, but you know, that movie made a lot of money. Like he's done huge. He does. How do you go from being like kind of a B, almost A actor to directing Will Smith movies?
I don't know. Maybe
like
maybe
I just looked up one day and he was directing, yeah. And I was like, what?
And now he did this. Now he did this. So. Let's begin with, of course.
Because it's garbage.
Yeah,
and the editor that let it come out is garbage.
No, actually, Hasbro Studios.
Facts right.
Yes, Hasbro Studios. Of course, obviously they're trying to make another Transformers franchise.
It's dumb.
Obviously, it didn't work.
It's dumb.
Here you have Taylor Kitsch, who, by the way, is 0-for-2 in the summer blockbuster sweepstakes. Probably not all of his fault. However, the opening scene, which I wish they had taken out. And you hear
just the opening scene.
Well, among other things, but no. Here's what happens.
That would you know what would save this? Let's lose that
the opening scene. Well, first off, the 10-minute scene when it's 2 hours and 10 minutes already.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to impress the girl, Liam Neeson's daughter, by going to get a chicken burrito. And instead of running the Taco Bells, which stay open late, mm-hmm. he goes to a convenience store, which somehow closes, and he goes through the roof and falls and hands her the chicken burrito right at the time he's getting tased by the police.
Because he's a rebel.
He's a rebel.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
So then his older brother, played by Alexander Skarsgård, who's in the Navy.
Is it Skarsgård or is it Sarsgaard? Or do people
no, this,
say
is not, this is not Peter Sarsgaard,
okay.
The actor who's the voice of the robot in Robot and Frank, and is doing cool things with Maggie Gyllenhaal. No, this is a different guy. He was in Melancholia, among other things. But he talks him into getting into the Navy. And, of course, the love of his life, the one he got tased for a chicken burrito over, is the Admiral, played by a cash-checking Liam Neeson. Not enough Liam Neeson in this film, but I'll get to that.
It's awful. I don't even know what else to say. It's
all I know
awful.
Is...
And as you hear, he...
Even in movies, I would just leave Liam Neeson's family alone.
Yeah, I think that's not a good thing. Not a good thing.
I don't care if you have the best intentions. Leave Liam Neeson's family alone.
If they move in next door and you bring a casserole, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
do it. If you want to offer to trim their hedges, don't do it.
He's mm-hmm. asking for problems.
He'll take the hedges and
Yeah, we know where you're going.
So anyway, of course, this kid who got tased over a chicken burrito advances farther, or further, if you're Tyler Hansborough, faster than anybody in the history of the U.S. Navy. Oh, my gosh.
That's right, so, because he's a screw, but he's got potential.
Potential.
He's like he's the Pete Mitchell, a.k.a. Maverick, of this movie. Only, even though he's a complete screw-up, he gets to go to Top Gun.
And slightly straighter. Says there's no,
you know
well, instead of shirtless volleyball, there's soccer in this film.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So, it's called Battleship. If they had called this film Seamen versus Aliens, notice how I slowed that down, I think this would have made more money, because guess what? I don't remember seeing any aliens in my Battleship game when I was growing
up. No, and
up.
I had electronic Battleship because we were rich.
So, yeah, you were... My dad hit the numbers that week, so we got the electronic. Son, I'm getting you an electronic Battleship. You take that old one, you give it to the neighbors.
Yeah.
So, and of course, why do we have aliens? Because that way a country doesn't feel offended that they're being the enemy in this movie. Well, why else would there be? And no, nobody says you sang my Battleship. So,
that would have made the movie. If somebody would have told me that, I still would have gone. I'd have paid. Well, I'd have probably had some girl pay so we could go to this film.
Yeah. So
it's dumb.
Then, as if that wasn't enough. So then you have, of course, the cute Admiral's daughter, who is a physical therapist, who's stuck on the mainland. This is shot in Hawaii. Another reason why you take the big check and do this movie. But she's, of course, on the island with one of her patients, a naval veteran with no legs. And, of course, token geeky computer whiz comic relief, who gets a backbone in the last 20 minutes of the film. The other thing about this film, which is really pandering, I think almost as bad as Act of Valor, is that the film does have actual naval veterans. And there is a sequence where the young kids need help, so the old whippersnappers like Admiral Clint Eastwood.
What was the other one that came out that had the... Navy,
Act of Valor.
Yeah, okay,
the actual actual soldiers.
No.
You know, we don't ask actors to be soldiers. We don't ask soldiers to act. Anyway, so this one, there is a scene where they need an extra ship. And, of course, these old veterans, along underscored by the music of AC/DC,
yeah,
come and help out. And, by the way, old Sea Dog veterans.
Is it Highway to Hell?
Thunderstruck.
Oh.
Thunderstruck, sorry. No, that's a downer ending. You don't want that. So... By the way, old sea dogs who curse but not enough to say MF, apparently that's funny in this film. Apparently.
Okay.
So, and the thing is, I think they're there, of course, is a salute to the troops. And, of course, if you dare criticize Battleship, you could get slammed hard because, well, there are actual veterans in the film. So,
well, you know, and people wonder that, you know, because the movie made like $60 million, which is just for that scope of
but
a movie.
But it had a budget of $212 million.
It was like $190 million, almost $200 million. And people were like, how does Hollywood keep making these movies? Well, I'm a nerd for numbers like this.
Sure.
There's a website I go to called Box Office Mojo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you can go there, and it has the domestic and the international
international
box office. Like, when you add that with what it did here, this movie made over $300 million.
And it's because of international. That's why Sly and Schwarzenegger were still making movies well into the 90s. This is why John Carter didn't make money in the United States, and somebody lost their job over at Disney. Mm-hmm. It made money in the rest of the world.
Yeah, it just barely broke even. But still, you know, there are certain films where you're like, how does, like, the, what was, Alexander, that movie that...
The Oliver Stone.
That just was horrible here, but it found an audience internationally. That movie almost made $500 million.
So much that they re-released it on DVD three times.
Yeah, so, you know, it's when people always ask, how do these movies get made? It's because, like, the amount of money these big, especially these big action movies make, they only make maybe a third sometimes of the money that they make here in the United States. Even though they're produced here, they make the majority. That's why, you know, character-driven films with a lot of dialogue, you know, it's harder to get those made because then you have to translate them, and it's harder because they may not, you know, translate to whatever the audience likes overseas. Like, you can release, you know, Battleship in Japan and Germany.
And, boom is universal.
Yeah, that's universal. Not a lot of dialogue to translate. Yeah.
So, and I wish this was the film I wish Liam Neeson had strapped syringes to his wrists and just came out running and beating the crap out of the aliens. But no, afraid not. So yeah, let's hear it.
So it's dumb.
So you don't recommend the film.
Kobe, what did I just say?
It's dumb.
One more time with feeling.
It's dumb.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let's.
Why can't we just see them do cool stuff all the time? I'm in a movie. I have a limited amount of time. Be cool.
There we go.
Yeah, this film's not even cool. So, and I can't I can't even think of chicken burritos anymore because of this.
And you know what? Sales of the game Battleship were not affected at all. Kids did not get into it.
No. You know why? Because there are no aliens in Battleship.
I remember seeing a commercial when the movie was out. There was a commercial for a new version of Battleship, and it was like two guys that were like very intense playing this game.
Kobe's got clenched hands.
Yeah, like, yes. Very intense, very into this game of Battleship, and like the background is like not some house. It's like stuff from the, like, they're at
campus.
Sea, and then the like robot things come up out of the water and stuff. And you sunk my Battleship, and they don't even say that in the movie, which is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. That's the least of this film's worries, believe me. All right, other titles that are out on Blu-ray.
It was unbelievable,
unbelievably dumb. So here's some titles. If you own a Blu-ray, would you buy this? And we're gonna get quick answers. And then it's great that all three of us are here for one title that has been reissued once again on Blu-ray. First off, on Criterion, the film version of the Who double album Quadrophenia. You also have Harvey, everyone's favorite Jimmy Stewart movie with the giant bunny.
Okay.
All three extended editions of Lord of the Rings.
Again?
Again. Oh, again.
Well, I mean, they just keep adding things to these movies?
Apparently. Lots of walking and talking about the ring. Woo!
All right. It's still quicker than reading the book.
I guess. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Nope.
School of Rock?
Nope.
No.
That's still his best. That and Bernie are his best performances from the same director.
I've seen School of Rock.
Emma
don't
loves
care.
I know you don't, but your sister likes it, yeah. So... Kobe doesn't have a sister. You ask us on the street. But by the way, after this, Fresh Air, an interview with Jack Black to talk about Bernie, among other things. And yes, I thought it already was on Blu-ray, but we need a framed poster of this film.
Jackie Brown.
No, Scarface.
That's
when you know you've hit it.
Once again?
I apparently they need to reissue it on Blu-ray once again after a year?
It's
2 years?
The 15th anniversary of when they started making like anniversary editions.
It's the anniversary of anniversaries?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
That's the first thing I bought for my bachelor pad is I had to get Scarface on DVD.
Oh, I thought you got the framed Scarface poster. That's the way we know you made it.
Well, yeah.
Every rapper and athlete. All right, we're going to take a short break. I want to have a discussion with filmmaker Mike Malloy, who made a really, really cool documentary called Eurocrime, and we'll talk with Jarrett Moore. I need to salute a dear, dear friend, and we'll talk some other movie nonsense, because that's what we do here. We give you movie information and movie nonsense. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Bye. TNA knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
So funny. Welcome back to Film Sociology. Thank you, Robert Isgale. I'm Matthew Sosa, hanging out with Jarrett Moore and Kobe Slagle. A couple other movie notes. Tonight at the IMA, as part of their, I think this is the last for their Summer Night Film Series, Sound of Music.
I thought they had stopped that because I couldn't find anything about the...
Right here. All you got to do is check the new
book. All I could find on the website was Meditation Walks.
No. And next weekend is Horror Hound. You got to add that extra syllable. You don't want to. Horror Hound.
I was looking at the calendar earlier today and saw that a month away we are in for...
The Room at Midnight.
Yes.
We will be there. So... I forgot to say this at the beginning of the show, and I apologize, but this show is dedicated to former Indiana Film Commission head Jane Roulon, who died on August 22nd at the age of 59. A wonderful woman and a patron of the arts. And she's been a guest on this show. I'm proud to say that she was a guest of mine, also on my old film show on AM. So to be able to chat with her on AM and FM, it meant a lot. So thanks, Jane. All right, I want to switch gears and do a chat with a producer, director, editor, Mike Malloy, who has a really cool documentary. He has a Facebook page. He's worked on the website. Apparently, he plunked all of his money into the film, and he's trying to gain money and get to festivals. So it's called Eurocrime, and it's a documentary about the cop and gangster films of Italy from the 1970s. So if you're a fan of the documentaries Machete Maidens Unleashed, which was about the Filipino exploitation films, as well as Not Quite Hollywood, which was about the exploitation films of the 70s, you're going to enjoy this. So first you're going to hear the trailer for Eurocrime. It's an extended one, and then a chat with Mike Malloy.
We're here to talk about Italian gangster films.
If they could make something that looked like
French Connection,
The Godfather, Bullied,
The Diary,
if it were the material,
gangster killer,
bad guys, thieves, thugs,
mob type of guy,
but using American actors,
Doug Bronson,
you bring that,
Jack Palance,
Lee Van Cleef,
they could sell these films to different parts of the world.
The Italian police movie, they've been a big thing all over the world.
I don't need no break.
That's not roll. Is it rolling?
I'm all right. I'm rolling.
Fine, let it roll.
There was a certain style to these things.
They took this genre of police movies, they made it their own.
Let's say in America, they put through, you know what setup is? You know where your camera goes and you do them. Here they do three or four a day. I would do like 120.
It was like one stunt after the other.
Italian stuntmen said, oh, you could do it. You could do it. It's not that hard.
We're in a car and we like this.
Here we go again. Boom.
Boom.
I think I peed my pants.
We were using a real knife.
I said, are you going to really shoot? He insisted on having it loaded. Like that far away from me?
There was one live round in the gun.
He fired the real real shots, the real bullets, right, you know, about a foot away from me. You know, I'll fight with him, but not with a loaded gun.
I said, well, this is bullshit.
God, you risked my life doing this stuff?
I've done a few things that are too many.
I still have 30% invalidity.
I'm just getting over the results.
He strips him down and castrates him.
Machine gunning a bunch of kids coming home from school.
We drove a forklift through a person.
Takes his genitals while he's screaming, shoves them in his mouth.
You know, he did the death dance. No, that was popular. Everybody wanted to do the death dance.
For us, where we were shooting the movies, the violence was like a black humor. How many are going to kill today? Three, four, no, six. You understand?
Violence.
Violence. A lot of violence.
There had been a surge of crime going on in Italy.
The entire city of Rome was blocked. You couldn't get out of the city without seeing a policeman at the street stopping you.
The carabinieri on street corners. The machine gun.
I was robbed three times. There's a famous saying, see Naples and die.
There was some mafia presence.
I said, so we'll pay off the Camorra, you know.
He said, it's not the idea. You pay off one Camorra, and then the other one is another Camorra, and then they start killing each other, and you're right in the middle of it.
There was a lot of things going on in Italy, of terrorism at the time. It was the Red Brigade.
Red Brigade.
Le Brigate Rosse, the Red Brigade.
Suddenly kidnapping started to take place in Italy.
And I happen to know a couple of people were kidnapped and killed.
I'd miss a bombing by two blocks.
They were shoving the police around.
It's a most annual disillusionment.
Pressed in bullets.
Talking about the politics.
Cock-a-poo-poo.
Tell me the title again.
Joining me on Film Sociology right now, the writer, director, editor, and co-producer of the documentary Eurocrime. Who do you think you are, John Sayles? Mike Malloy is here. Hi, Mike.
Hey there. What is the reference? Because I have an exclamation point? Is that it?
No, the writing, directing, editing, co-producing.
See, I see.
Or you're Robert Rodriguez. He's another one who edits his own work, I believe.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, the editing was a real hitch on this one. A year plus on the editing.
Wow. I would say, so of course your documentary is about the Italian police and crime movies of the 70s. What was your first Eurocrime movie experience?
Well, that a lot of people ask me, like, what film, you know, pushed me over into Eurocrime obsession, and it didn't happen that way at all for me. I got into these films before I knew they were a genre. I would just see selected, isolated little Italian-made crime films, and it never occurred to me that this was a whole genre. This was something that came after the spaghetti westerns, because the Italians were very fat-oriented, and they would burn something out, and then they'd move on to something else. And after the Italians had ripped off the American western, put on their own spin, and came up with something entirely different, after they exhausted that, they turned to Dirty Harry cop films and The Godfather gangster films, and they did that from like 1972 to 1980. So I was just seeing all these films, and like in college and stuff, people would say, what kind of movies do you like, Mike? And I would tell them why. You know, I like Italian films, I like French films. They thought I probably was watching highbrow stuff like, you know, The 400 Blows or something like that. And meanwhile, I was watching these, shoot-'em-ups with all these grisly murders in them.
And they always had, usually an American or English star and a director, and it's usually listed directed by Nick Jones. You're like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, sometimes they would anglicize the directors' names or something like that, but that happened more with the spaghetti westerns. By the time the Eurocrime films came around, people pretty much knew that they were getting an Italian product out of Italy. But the Eurocrime films didn't penetrate the U.S. like the spaghetti westerns did, so that's why now, you know, this revival movement that kind of spurred me to do the documentary, 30 years belated, these films are finally, resonating with American audiences.
So I guess I'll try a different approach on what were the films that did motivate you to start this documentary?
Oh, there are a number of them. The thing is that, there's so many different cuts and there's so many different titles. Like there's one that I love called Rome Armed to the Teeth, but I only recommend it in its Assault with a Deadly Weapon incarnation because they just lopped off the first 20 minutes and made it a much better film under the title Assault with a Deadly Weapon. But some of the ones that have been available for streaming on Netflix that people can easily see are things like Caliber 9 and Street Law. Street Law is a great vigilante film, and there's some debate as to, because everybody just assumes that the Italians are the ripoff artists. But there's some debate as to whether Street Law came out before Death Wish. They both are 1974 films.
Right, and as you point out in the documentary, one of the things that the Italians did to make it their own was the amount of violence and cruelty, I mean, misogynistic cruelty and sex scenes in it. Was that from the get-go?
Yeah, the Italians did not have the same puritanical influences that American cinema did, or the American cinema was, shedding by that time, but still had the last vestiges of the Italian cinema, The main thing that I see difference as far as their boundaries of violence is the Italians almost delighted in killing kids. And that still in American cinema was a big taboo. But yeah, there would be like this one movie where there's a bunch of kids getting out of school and they happen upon the scene of a bank robbery. So this whole school's worth of kids round this corner, right as some, bank robber with an itchy trigger finger just, is ready to down people, and he does exactly that. It's just unbelievable the carnage where kids are concerned.
It's funny you mentioned that because last year, I don't know if you ever saw Hobo with a Shotgun, but they have a whole school bus gets torched up filled with kids.
Yeah, as I say, North American cinema, I know that was Canadian, but North American cinema has finally kind of shed some of those boundaries, but the Italians were, you know, a good 30 years ahead of us.
And one of the things that was brought up, and I know Fred Williamson brought this up, about how American audiences and some American actors were kind of pampered as far as getting the best and the biggest budgets, and the fact that, you know, he was shooting movies there where they didn't even stay quiet during shooting. And, you know, a lot of it was dubbing later, but it was a completely different shooting environment.
Yeah, you kind of bring up two different things. The one, they did not shoot live sound, so that was an adjustment for American actors to show up on set, and as they're giving their line deliveries, the sets are being built next door, and people are pounding with hammers, and people are out ordering their cappuccino and, you know, stuff like that. So, that was a big adjustment. But then also something that Fred Williamson, the American star, alluded to is the fact that, you know, you show up and there's no star egos in an Italian crew. There was no barriers. There was no hierarchy on set. Everybody was just there to make a movie. And, maybe the only ego or macho thing was the Italians. Everybody wanted to perform their own stunts. The big leading stars, you know, it was just expected that, you know, this was a manly, you know, tough guy movie. Of course I'm going to, you know, jump out of the car myself. Of course I'm going to jump out of the second-story building myself. The French actor Jean-Paul Belmondo, big, big international star, you know, became a star with the French New Wave movies, you know, these dramas. But by the time the Eurocrime movies rolled around in the 70s, he went full bore into performing the stunts. I don't even know how they got insurance for those movies.
Did they have insurance, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one aspect that I've never really delved into, but these movies are so run and gun, you know, with the, you know, they not only did they get the leading men to perform their own stunts, but they would just go out in public and what they called stealing shots. You know, they would just go and perform, you know, shootouts on the open public streets, and people just were assuming that, you know, this was, you know, they were seeing some bank heist in progress and stuff. So it was very easy to get the extras to act naturally.
Well, and there was a little bit of that. I mean, there still is in the United States. I mean, we've heard stories of Cassavetes and early Kubrick doing such things, but not to the degree of these guys. And, of course, it also helped that a lot of the Italian filmmakers also had to deal with a lot of the local quote-unquote characters.
Yeah, especially down in southern Italy and areas like Naples. The street people were a major influence, and, you know, there would be beggars on the corners and stuff, and if you wanted to shoot on that corner, then you had to pay the beggar what he thought he was going to make for the day and stuff like that. So in some ways it was a minor hassle to shoot down in southern Italy, but in another way it was just they were just tremendous. The filmmakers were tremendously liberated to just go out and do whatever, and they didn't feel beholden to scripts either. You know, they would pass a unique location, and they're like, ah, let's just change it from a scene at the beach to a scene at the church. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, it's just they were very spontaneous. And that's what a lot of the actors and directors looking back say, yeah, these films were extremely low budget, but they had, you know, just such a life to them because of the spontaneity, and they're such unpredictable. And today's movies, you know, you see them and, you know, as one interviewee said, you almost know when the car's going to explode before it explodes. Mm-hmm. And the Italian films just, things came at you crazy like, and you just didn't know what to expect.
Now, a lot of the actors did say if there was still business, they would not only do business in Italy but also live there. What happened?
Well, the first decline in Italian cinema happened at the end of the Eurocrime boom, coincidentally. It had nothing to do with Eurocrime, but that's when belatedly the Italians started getting more television, because up till that point they'd only had about 1.5 channels, and there was a very big restriction on how many movies could be shown on TV. So the Italians went to the cinema maybe 4 or 5 times a week, you know, kind of like we tune into stuff on TV 4 or 5 times a week. By the mid-70s, they finally started getting TV. They got satellites and, you know, antennas and stuff, and started to bring in stuff from other countries. And so the film industry went into sharp decline then. They kept on through the 80s. They turned to Mad Max ripoffs. They turned to Indiana Jones ripoffs. But you know, by the end of the 80s, it had wound down even more.
Yeah, I remember Fred Williamson with a bow and arrow and shoulder pads and a headband, and that equaled the future.
Yeah, that was a version of Mad Max. Mad Max, and then throw in a little dash of Escape from New York, and that's what the Italians were obsessed with in the 80s.
Now, you also, one of the things that's most impressive about Eurocrime are the number of people you were able to get to sit down and talk. How many people did you talk to, and how long did it take to get everybody?
I think we talked to 21 people that made the doc, and then some came kind of afterwards that we hope to be including as DVD supplements or something like that. I had never, during the production of this whole thing, I had never left the country. I'd never been to Italy, I'd never been to Rome. The interviews that we picked up in Rome were a great guy named Federico Cadeo happens to shoot DVD supplements for the big cult DVD labels over in Europe, and he would, you know, drop a line to me and say, hey, I'm shooting an interview and so and so, do you want me to piggyback some Euroclime questions on? So that worked out beautifully.
And how many actors and filmmakers did you personally interview?
7 to 9, I think. You know, this was a real no budget affair, you know, with, you know, basically fueled by fan support. So, you know, we got some money on Kickstarter by the fans and everything. So when I could limit my travel, I did. I, you know, tried not to be egotistical and to think that I needed to be there. I wrote all the questions for all the interviews, but I didn't feel as if I needed to be there in person if I had someone trusted that could, you know, set up the camera in my place.
Okay, big geeky question. What was it like to interview Franco Nero?
Franco Nero was very, very cool, but we kind of surprised him. I drove down to Miami, and he was there for a film festival, and I made a deal with the guy who put him up. And Franco Nero, I come into the house with the camera crew and everything, and Franco Nero was actually coming out of a hidden door in a false bookcase. How surreal is that? And he looks up, and there's a film crew in the living room where he's staying. So, yeah, that was my first time laying eyes on Franco Nero.
Well, and the fact that the man's still working today, decades later, and of course, you know, started out in spaghetti westerns and moved on to Eurocrime when he wasn't wooing Guinevere.
Right. Yeah, he's remained very relevant. All this Django Unchained stuff aside, yeah, he was recently in an episode of Law and Order. He was, you know, in that Letters to Julia thing.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's staying very relevant, and I'm very pleased because, you know, he's a tremendous movie star.
Now, did you see or were aware of the documentaries Not Quite Hollywood, Machete Maidens Unleashed when making this?
Yeah, the Eurocrime, again, this was not like Not Quite Hollywood, which I presume had Australian Cultural Commission dollars behind it. This was just one guy. I started the documentary in my living room. I had to finish it in the upstairs of my girlfriend's parents' house because it cost me my ability to pay rent even.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just, you know, and I hate to say I was a one-man army because that doesn't do credit to the people who, you know, volunteered. I had a volunteer narrator. I had a volunteer animator. So I don't want to ever, you know, slight those people. And, you know, as I mentioned, the cameramen and stuff who helped me. But, yeah, this was – so I actually started before Not Quite Hollywood. But, that stuff came out while I was still putting the finishing touches on mine.
And by the way, One Man Army sounds like a Franco Nero film in 1978.
Why can't it be a Franco Nero movie in, you know, 2012?
Well,
we established he's still a movie star.
Well, good. You talk to him then. I'll review it then.
Sounds good.
So, Mike, if people, besides wanting more information, let's start with, for more information on how to find your documentary, what should folks do?
The big gathering place now is on Facebook, facebook.com/Eurocrime.
Okay. And if folks were trying to do Eurocrime 101, what films should they start with?
Well, yeah, the ones that, and I think that some of them just came off Netflix Instant, but the ones you can start with that have been available for a long time on Netflix have been The Italian Connection, Caliber 9, Street Law. Those are three solid, because I think that the core of Eurocrime movies are, you know, kind of this one man against the world kind of theme, and I think all three of those embody that pretty well.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for your interest.
So go to Facebook and check out Eurocrime. That was Mike Malloy, the director, editor, producer of that. And so Jarrett Moore's hanging out with me.
Yes.
We weren't able to have you on last week, manager of the Community Ambassador Program, but I know you wanted to chime in a little bit on the films of Tony Scott.
Yes.
By the way, young Mr. Slagle here, we went through the titles, and I don't think he's seen any films by Tony Scott.
Everyone remembers, of course, Top Gun.
No, I think of True Romance. Yeah, you know what? Because you can't have a manly movie with a soundtrack featuring Kenny Loggins and Berlin.
Okay, yeah, maybe not. But, I mean, this is a weird thing to say. For his action movies, it was almost like you could almost say they're what...
a reflection of the times?
That too, because like it really was almost
The Hunger screams MTV. Top Gun does to a degree.
Days of Thunder.
Days of Thunder.
Which what's on screen, I've actually heard that he said that's not actually what he wanted to do, but you know, it was a big budget movie, Tom Cruise was the star, and they had to turn it in by a certain time.
Of course.
And so, you know, even with those big names, like they're like, look, we got to have this film knock it out. Beverly Hills Cop 2. You know, a lot of people they talk about that one. I actually enjoyed Beverly Hills Cop 2. Now, mind you, I saw it when I was probably not supposed to be watching Beverly Hills Cop 2, and I just thought, you know, Eddie Murphy, you know, for people my age, Eddie Murphy was just—he's just still a god. You know what I'm saying?
Who's made a thousand words.
I just act like those movies never happened. When Eddie Murphy was still doing rated R movies in the 1980s, like
sure,
he could do no wrong. And Beverly Hills Cop 2 was, and plus Chris Rock was in it.
That's right. That's right. So I always say I gave Mr.
Very
Slagle,
small role, but he was in it.
I gave Mr. Slagle True Romance to watch. I also big fan of Crimson Tide.
Oh yeah.
And Man on Fire. Even though the second half of that film kind of just becomes standard revenge film,
mm-hmm,
he worked with Denzel quite a bit. His last film was Unstoppable, and I tell you, it's not a great, but it's a really good action movie. It's 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think any other director probably would have dragged this
Michael
thing out.
Michael Bay, that would have been a two and a half hour movie.
Stuff got real.
Yeah.
So,
it says here he produced Unstoppable and also produced Prometheus.
Yeah, well, he's along with his brother, Ridley.
And the thing is, it's because Scott is such a common name, really.
Yeah.
I didn't even put it together. Those guys were brothers, so.
All those titles, they're worth checking out, worth renting or revisiting, depending on your age or life path. So. And Kobe is going to be watching True Romance very soon.
Yeah. I'm making my way through. I saw I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
See, now you have to watch Black Dynamite because you're going to get two different contrasting.
But you know what? See, the thing is to watch Black Dynamite and really get a good feel. And I'm talking about the movie, not the cartoon that I'm kind of hot and cold on. You have to watch Superfly, Willie Dynamite, because a lot of things are pulled from
those.
A lot of the comedy is kind of culled from those movies.
Hell
so,
Up in Harlem,
you know,
Black Caesar.
But,
watch all those already?
But the thing is, it does stand on its own because I've shown it to people and they thought it was a movie from the 70s.
And that's
they had
the thing.
No idea that this was produced in 2010.
Yeah, well, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker is like an airplane version of the blaxploitation film.
Yeah.
Black Dynamite is more the grindhouse, the machete versions. Really, really knows the genre, really knows it well, and there's a big fight scene with Richard Nixon.
Yeah,
so
it's really like I said, it's one of those movies, and because it didn't come out here as far as being in the theaters, so of course I got a bootleg of it.
We did not hear that.
But the bootleg was so good, I went out and bought a legit copy because I wanted to hear the director's commentary. But what was strange is my bootleg actually has extended scenes. and the thing is, there's actually the pimp council scene, for the few of you who might know what I'm talking about, actually extended, and it's actually some of the jokes are better on the bootleg. So.
And no voiceover from Gary Owens. All right, here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
By the way, Trip the Bountiful next weekend at Mud Creek Players. Go mudcreekplayers.org for ticket information. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Thank you, Jarrett. Thank you, Kobe.
No problem.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point, WFYI.org. Thanks, Mike. Love you, Jane. Take care.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Thank you.